advise your troops to now and forever hold your peace here in the mobile infantry. You know we're gonna be heading ourselves out to, of course, the platoon. That's right, Pluto, which one used to be a planet here on the solar system. Well, the bugs have finally found their way there. Then we're gonna head to Hydora, Tophet, Tescazifer, and of course, Glendathu. And make sure whatever you do, you listen to your troop sergeant before we head out there in the boonies. Get ready there, as we're about prepared to drop. Would you like to know more?
I sit here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that movie, I'm the leader, Molly. Wow, I'm the leader. Wow, I'm the leader. Oh, I'm the leader, Molly.
And howdy, folks. Welcome to episode number 232 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet here at Quinlan's Canteen in the Gold Coast of Australia, here at Ground Zero of all mulletry and, of course, great action movies, retro and more. Of course, brought to you by the Phantom Podcast Network, of course, thanks to, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel and, of course, Kyle Wagner, giving us this amazing platform to chat about this greatness when it comes to this stuff. And here's an episode today which, you know, even for me, had to, give me a chance to not only watch a series which I'd sporadically seen back in 99 when it aired, and on DVD in the preceding years, VHS actually, it was the first one I saw of it. But what's interesting is going back now and actually going through and enjoying what this series really is, and particularly for me, he's a big fan of Robert Heinlein's novel, especially the adaptation that, of course, was done by the director of RoboCop, and gave us, of course, Starship Troopers, a film which, you know, is so much fun to revisit all the time. And again, we did that, obviously, episode number 230, we looked at that, and it's a great film. The sequel's not so much, which we've talked about before, and we won't go into that, but this is really the sequel series, or at least the tie-in, which really brings that, you know, the ethos, the feel, everything that was, from both sources, the novel, and of course, when it comes down to it, also the movie as well. And there's some ties, there's some differences, and, you know, again, this is its own little series when you think about it. So we're going to be talking about that tonight, my thoughts about it, and, the legacy that it's left behind, and the fact that the technology used at the time was pretty much in its infancy. You know, CGI animated series, we had things like Voltron, The Third Dimension, which has been talked about a number of times, being pretty damn big advancement for its time. But, you know, it's interesting. It's certainly something that, I think I look back now. Does it hold up as well? No. But you've got to give it to it for, sticking to their guns and coming up with something that was really, at the time, groundbreaking. You know, all the reward to them for, you know, coming up with something that people are thinking of as one of the most beloved series of the 90s. And that's all here tonight, of course, on the Lethal Mullet Podcast, folks. So, without further ado, let's get into it.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name's Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Phantom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com, or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. And also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others, like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Well, check out those links, and of course, check out the site, folks, and you know, let us know what you want to see more of here on the show. Now, before we get into the news, which there's quite some, you know, there's quite a bit of good stuff. Put it that way. There's some really fun stuff on the way, and we're going to be chatting about that very, very soon. But I want to put a big thank you out there to some of you listeners now. They're really starting to interact and let us know what you enjoy. And like I said, you know, bring up things like Roughnecks is something that you, the listeners, wanted to look at. And for me, it's been a real joy to get back into watching a show, which, to be honest, I couldn't find anywhere, which is something we'll talk about. We'll talk about why it's been so hard to bloody well find. But YouTube, thank you. But I've actually got a hard copy of those. But huge thanks to all of you. And obviously, we've changed formats only recently. Back on, obviously, fpnet.podbean.com. So, FPN site. If anything, that's going to give you all a chance to really check out this podcast and obviously what we do there. And my interactions, obviously, with the rest of FPN, which are like a family, folks. They really are. They're amazing. In particular, Kevin and Kyle, who, you know, I've been friends with for years, but I wouldn't have met Tom or Dan or, you know, the boys from Waypodge or anything without, you know, really joining this family. And, you know, I'm just glad that you all have a chance to react and obviously interact with these great guys and their fans, just like you, just like me. And we all enjoy what we enjoy. And what a place to do it, folks. Because go and check it out and grab yourself a T-shirt, hat, whatever, of course, from, you know, the great areas that are out there. Go and do it and you'll be the best for it.
Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
All right, folks, quite a bit to cover in the news, and we'll get to a lot of that very, very soon, but I want to chat about a couple of different things. One of those, first of all, is a big shout out to somebody that's in my friends list, been there for a while, and somebody that I look up to as a martial artist, and obviously, he's an actor as well, and creator, director, all of the above. And, of course, that's Jalal Marie. And, you know, I've been going through a lot of Jalal's earlier work, mainly because I found some older material in really good nick, too, by the way. And one of those is Fearless Tiger. Now, that was also known as Black Pearls in some countries around the world. This is a Canadian martial arts movie, which is, you know, amazing. It really is. It's a time when, of course, Jalal was coming out with some, obviously, some great stuff when it comes to action and martial arts, but movies which also starred some great, you know, other stars like Bolo Yeung, who would go on to obviously be in other material around that time and with same actors and stuff like that, and a lot of fun. Now, this was one that I found on VHS, believe it or not, just by chance, and it's basically in brand new, you know, condition. It's like it's never been played before. It had the full cellophane around it, and not only was I, you know, so into obviously that period of film, but to see it brand new now, as in like it's never been put through, it is amazing. I've always loved Jalal's you know, martial arts as well. Obviously, he comes from I do believe a Shotokan karate background, and then into kung fu. If I remember right, I've seen a few interviews with Jalal, and he talks about some of those things. But the best thing is to really go back and watch some of these great movies. And this is about a movie about a martial artist who studies under an old master, Bolo Yeung, and he's avenging the death of his brother. And this is at the hands of basically kingpins running a drug ring in there. And like I said, this is one of those ones where really, at the end of the day, the martial arts wins out and really pushes to the fore. It is amazing. And we will cover Fearless Tiger in an upcoming episode. It's one thing. We're going to be moving into some older material, folks, which some of you may not have seen before, but need to. Some other ones, we've got an exploitation film, The Man from Hong Kong, which we'll be doing soon. It's got half the cast of Mad Max in it, plus Sammo Hung. And obviously the star too was the real competition to Bruce Lee back in the day. So we'll be talking about that very, very soon, folks. Now also, we're going to be looking at some of the other stuff coming up as well. Now, there's lots of Star Wars news, obviously. One of the big ones is Chris Nolan has talked about how he would love to do Star Wars. He doesn't want to do superhero movies anymore. He's kind of done that to death with Batman and obviously the Dark Knight trilogy, which, I mean, where do you go from there, folks? But him coming into Star Wars, I mean, maybe it's for the best, and who knows? I mean, I think if you put somebody of his caliber in there as a director and writer, creator, whatever you want to call it, you certainly can't have the sort of tightened reins from upstairs and the producers and, of course, owners of Disney, Lucasfilm, all that sort of thing, sort of stamping onto his ground of creativity. He needs room to move, so I think if they did that, it would certainly be one, it'd be interesting. But he would definitely be a welcome addition, I think, to that area. But one of the interesting things is, and this is courtesy of DarkHorizons.com, folks, if you're not already subscribe to that website or checked out what is to offer over there, then you're mad, because you need to. It is one of the longest running movie review websites and just movie information websites out there, and Australian run is just fantastic. Now, Chris Nolan said in an interview that he's a massive fan of Will Ferrell's 2006 film Talladega Nights, and now, of course, this is the one about obviously, the NASCAR drivers, and it's got John C. Reilly, Sacha Baron Cohen, Gary Cole, Michael Clark Duncan, and many others, and Amy Adams as well. But it is a fantastic film. It's funny. It's one of my favorite Will Ferrell films. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Will Ferrell, but this and The Other Guys are probably his strongest. But it's great to see that he's into that too as well. Now, what's interesting too is if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like anyone that grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, like me, and even now, there's a comic that came out which pits, of course, Michelangelo as the last of the brothers, the ninja, where, of course, he is now hunting down some type of mystery. Now, what's great about it is that he is actually fantastic in this. But putting the comic aside, TMNT, The Last Ronin, which is a very dark tale, is now in currently in a development stage to become a game. Now, anyone that's grown up in the 80s and 90s like me, of course, it is a fantastic, you know, franchise to have as, you know, obviously a computer game one. Because we've got games like, of course, the Konami one that came out on the Nintendo, or the Super Nintendo at the time. It was just brilliant. Even the old NES version, which I currently have an edition of, folks. I've got an original NES with the Turtles cartridge, folks. Yes. Yes, the old game, the walk-along platformer. Yep, I've got it. But I've also, you know, grown up with, of course, the Konami one, which had Krang and all those sorts of things. It had Shredder and the Foot Clan, and it was just fantastic. So something definitely to check out. Now, we also have one of the interesting ones, which is, of course, Ahsoka. Now, for Star Wars fans, this is no doubt something that's going to be an interesting time. The Ahsoka series was something that's always been on the horizon, you know, ever since, obviously, Rosario Dawson was picked up to play the character in other TV shows, and obviously The Mandalorian, the Book of Boba Fett as well. But what's interesting about Ahsoka Tano is one of, obviously, George's characters. He created for the Clone Wars franchise. And, obviously, it's got a great cast in this series. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, or Mrs. Ellen, Ewan McGregor, folks, may we say, playing Hera Syndulla. The late, great Ray Stevenson as Baylan Skoll. Ivana Sarko as Shin Hardy. Diana Lee Inosanto as Morgan Elsbeth. Obviously, she's coming back from previous series, which is, of course, Mandalorian. We got Eamon Esfandi as Ezra Bridger, Wes Chatham as Captain Enoch. We've got David Tennant as the voice of Hyung. We've got Genevieve Riley as Mon Mothma again. And, of course, Hayden Christensen coming back as Anakin Skywalker. Now, what's great about this one is, you know, the caliber, first of all, of this is just great. And what we see in the trailer, we see Baylan Skoll in with the character Shin Hardy, played by, of course, Ivana Sarko. And what's great about it is these two are kind of, as you can see, now this is just my own interpretation of it, they are ex-Jedi, but they're not Sith, and they're using orange lightsabers. So the crystal, or the actual Jedi lightsaber crystal itself, has been bled down to an orange color. which is neither dark nor light, and it's sort of somewhere in the middle there, folks, all right, which is really, really important. So if you get that part, so it makes them basically dark Jedi, all right? And it's certainly something that's going to really bring apart the fact that they're all fighting against, which is, of course, Admiral Thrawn, which we'll get to in a sec. So, you know, big part of me growing up in the 90s was the return of Star Wars after that little dark period from 1983 up to, of course, the mid-90s, or in this case, the early 90s, when the great Timothy Zahn created, of course, a novel to continue the series called Here to the Empire, which I'm a huge fan of. Is one of my favorite books, that whole trilogy, to be honest. And everything that he's done since, I mean, that led me to Kevin J. Anderson's trilogy and, of course, Timothy Stackpole's amazing X-Wing series. Lucasfilm, why aren't you bloody well making an X-Wing series? Not a movie. Make a bloody series. I mean, crikey. But, yeah, so it obviously led into that period of the expanded universe, which is no longer canon. But at the same time, you know, who cares? It's still better. Nothing they've come up with since has been as good as those books. I hate to tell you, it all sucks in comparison to the old days. As much as they're putting this effort into it, and a lot of it's good, it just is not as good. But I'm, you know, hats off to them for what they've done, and I'm just not saying that it's not as... Sucks is probably a bit harsh, but I will say this, you know... It's just the time I grew up in was that the sense of adventure in that time was just amazing. I mean, you got Jorah Sabaoth, this dark Jedi, which pretty much fits the bill of Balin Skull and all these guys as well. And you know, at one stage in that creation, he was going to be an evil clone of what was it? It was going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, I think even they were going to do an evil clone of other characters as well. But let's just say, at the end of the day, great time. And that's what it really brings up. The fact that, you know, what they're doing now is kind of bringing elements and threads of those storylines in there in this modern version of the canon, whatever you want to call it. And I've got to say, hats off to them. They're doing bloody well with it. And I just hope they keep that steady pace. Because right now, a lot of Star Wars fans... that have been around for years are definitely wanting to check out other material. And, you know, whether it's Dune, Star Trek, Stargate, even as far as The Expanse, they're heading towards those routes because they, you know, the storytelling hasn't been as strong, characterization not as strong, you know, and I think the big thing is staying away from doing movies has really harmed, you know, the level of appreciation some of the fans had. There's a lot of new fans, too, at the same time. But I think at the end of the day, coming back to it, something like Nolan coming in and really revolutionizing that would be great. But great to see what this Ahsoka series comes out with. The other thing I did see is a trailer, which I gather you're not meant to be seeing yet. A trailer for The Acolyte, which looks very much in the mold of the prequel era. Now, obviously, it's set, what is it, 100, maybe 200 years before The Phantom Menace, and it is about basically a Jedi turned Sith acolyte. And we've got Carrie Ann Moss in there from the Matrix films. We've also got Keanu Reeves rumored to be playing some character in here, as you know, obviously he's doing that to catch up with Carrie Ann Moss. But there's a whole amazing cast in there as well. And look, I'm keen to see what they do there because as they're talking about this is the height of the Jedi. This is this new era, which, you know, has been off talk about, the High Republic. And, you know, I've only really got into a little bit of that because I got sidetracked by Dune, folks. The release of Dune really took me away. But I did read Charles Sewell's The Light of the Jedi, and, you know, it's in an interesting time period. I'm even holding the book as we speak, folks, yes. And I know they've done, obviously, a whole amazing amount of books and novels and tie-ins and stuff like that, and it really has been a great thing for the new fans. So huge hats off to those that do create these things and obviously do an amazing job. But now we get to see this in film. And I think, to be honest, enough of the sequel era, enough of the prequel era. Let's get to this High Republic, which they've been talking about and building. And let's just see material set in that era, folks. I'm keen to see where this goes. But it certainly looks dark, deceptive, and, you know,
something that was filmed with obviously that in mind. So I think it's going to be huge.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide, who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham, all on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies and more. Here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Right, folks, here we go. Chatting about the CGI animated series based on, of course, 1959 Starship Troopers, which is, of course, written by Robert A. Heinlein. And, of course, it's also based around the 1997 movie adaptation. The director is, of course, Paul Verhoeven. Of course, he serves as executive producer on the series. You can kind of see that it's definitely something that he wants to tie into his previous work. And something that's just as exciting on it. So, the film's director is definitely somebody that I don't think was a science fiction fan as such. But, you know, he grew up in time in and around, of course, World War II. Which I think, you know, to some degree, you know, it being such a gritty, tough, and of course, horrific time, had a bearing on how he would, you know, portray films being so gritty and not pulling any punches, which is something he never has done since. One of the great things, too, about this is, of course, as far as exploits of Razak's Roughnecks, Mobile Infantry Squad, which, of course, is going through the Bug War. And this is basically newly united humanity. All of humanity against the extraterrestrial race known as Bugs. Now, of course, they're also referred to in the film and in this as Arachnids, which we'll talk about a little bit more about that soon. This was a series I saw on cable TV back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it played right up to about 2005 on Foxtel in Australia. It was also on SBS at one stage there, I do believe, and also on Channel 2, possibly. Some people have told me, not that I saw it that way. It was picked up by the Sci-Fi Channel in the US, and it was also streamed on Crackle in the US, and also several mini-sodes or mini-episodes came out as well. So this has got a little bit of everything. It's got elements of, you know, obviously from the actual Heinlein novel. It's got elements too of Verhoeven's films, and, you know, I think there's sort of a little bit of crossover there too. There's also the extraterrestrial race known as the Skinnies, and this comes into it too. We've got drop pods, which are a big part of it. Obviously, that's something that we see in other franchises, aka Warhammer 40K, used with, of course, the Space Marines, hugely inspired by this and, of course, Dune. The Sardaukar were a huge influence on Space Marines as well. But one of the great things about this, we've got the power armor suits. Now, again, Warhammer power armor suits as well. So we'll talk about that. We've also got original elements of this, which weren't in the others, which is, of course, the Pluto campaign as well, plus the political and many, many others. Now, for those that don't know too much about the series, we'll get a little bit of the plot just very quickly. So the mobile infantry defeats this massive infestation on the planet Pluto. And this is basically part of what we call SCICOM, which is Strategically Integrated Coalition of Nations. And from here, they declare war on the Bugs. So from here, we get basically an introduction into the mobile infantry through this. And we have Alpha Team, known as Razak's Roughnecks, okay? Which you might know from, of course, you know, the same sort of thing as Ratchek's Roughnecks, I guess, in the movie. And they're heading to, of course, Pluto, and this is, of course, Operation Pest Control. all right, break out the mortine, won't you? So it follows them as they destroy Bug City on Pluto, and then they sight a massive transport bug. This shows that the bugs are not obviously part of Pluto, they're from somewhere else. They go, of course, to the planet Hydora, and this is where it basically goes around a star near Virgo, this constellation there, and this is where they find a brain bug. So similar to what we see in the first film, folks, okay? So we got that, and then we've also got the fact that the Skinnies and the overseeing that, and they basically go against theirs, the control bugs, and free Toffit as well. From here, this is where they start to, and I think this is the great thing about this series, like Robotech before it, this is where they start to lose people. So the victory of this one, like many other series, we get to see the toll of war on people like, of course, Carl Jenkins in this. Who's basically put into a state of mental trauma in this too. From here, obviously the control bugs were overseeing the Skinnies originally. This is where the Skinnies soon enlist Psycon to fight the bugs, mainly because they don't have any form of space travel, especially interstellar as well. From here, they of course go to the bug homeworld of Klendathu, which we remember from the film, and they destroy the bug queen. But she gets away. And of course, from here, headed towards Earth. Her transport bug is then taken out before she can get to the homeworld, but she also makes it to Earth. From here, of course, this is where the big battle starts and it really kicks off. So the series itself is broken down into a series of campaigns, if you like, very militaristic the way it's sort of set out. So we've got the Pluto campaign, which is 5 episodes, obviously taking place on the planet of Pluto, as we said in the story write-up. We've got Hydora campaign, another 5 episodes, and this is taking place on Hydora, which is basically covered by water, if you like. So it's very, very luscious. And then we've got the Toffit campaign, as a desert planet is home to where the Skinnies come from, so we get to see that sort of, obviously, layout and how, obviously, they live and stuff like that. The Tesca campaign is on the jungle moon of Tesca Nemorosa. And this is a great, actually, it's probably 5 of my favorite episodes they did. We've also got the Zephyr campaign, takes on this one on a frozen asteroid, which is a good one. And then we've got the Klendathu campaign, which is on the bug's homeworld of Klendathu. We've also got Trackers, which is 5 episodes that take place on the journey from Klendathu to Earth. And these are, the others are recaps of 4th as Rico is floating through space. And then the 5th one investigates Razak. The Homefront campaign all takes place on Earth. So there's 5 episodes, 4 others were planned but never completed. There you go. So, interesting series. Certainly evokes just, my own thoughts. The look and stuff like that definitely was to tie in with the film. But at the same time, it's got its own feel and sound. And I think things like the Foley, that we heard of things like gunshots, whatever you want to hear it from the movie. It's not quite the same here, but it's still, it's pretty damn sweet for what it is. And I really enjoyed at least those parts of it. But, it's for a whole, the thing really works for me for the time that it came out in 1999. I think the voice work is great. We'll talk about some of the cast in a sec. But I think that's the thing, is it's been hard to get the whole series as one. I mean, I watched Foxtel or where it was at the time, and only got the end of it. And now, to say I don't have the entire series, but what I do have is the Toffit campaign, the Hydora campaign, and the Tesca campaign. So at least, I've got a big bunch of the start, at least. But these are some of the better episodes anyway, from what I remember of the others that I've seen. But these ones I did not see, at least on the original. So a lot of the problem with this series was that it was, cancelled. But I think the big thing is too, and this is something that we find, is that it just wasn't given a chance to really be seen out in the world. So it was sold to the syndication, and this was to air episodes out to basically see if there were enough to get on schedules and things like that too. But the problem was there was only a few episodes that were put out, and to a lot of these channels.
and they were repeatedly put on. You know, there's a rerun after one after another. So if you're watching one, you could be watching the same one the next day instead of watching a different one. So, you know, there was no real plan set with syndication that way too. The series was sold to Sci-Fi, but without any authorization on two. And this is where Sony and Sci-Fi basically lost out to rights to the show and rights to the, obviously, cable and stuff like that too. So the two effects companies working on the show were fired after a few episodes. And of course, this ruined the ambitious scale of the episodes, you know, and really, again, you know, really didn't push to be the greatest it could be too. So there were also flashback clip shows in it too as well. And it's also the time that this was put on as well. You know, if you had cable, it was one thing. You could watch it on the scales that it was coming, but you really had to be there for it too. So with the DVD releases, there was a fan campaign as well. And what's interesting about this too is that the, you know, a lot of the stuff was just not put out. The fact that they put out some, but not all, and this is where we started to get some of those straight out too. And from what I remember, I only remember seeing four really put out there, and I think that's the hard thing for me. I only just saw what was there. And of course, there's more series than there need to be too. So yeah, it's not exactly what we were, you know, after, but still not the same. All right, let's talk about the voice cast. All right, so we've got Private, Corporal, Sergeant, and of course then Lieutenant, or Lieutenant as we say here in Australia, Johnny T. Rico. That's right, or Juan Rico, played by, of course, Reno Romano. And of course, he's the big focus of the series as we get to see him go through all the chains of command, and obviously the levels of command, I should say. And, you know, it's similar to the movie, but, you know, again, he is the focus of this series, along with, of course, Private Dizzy Flores, or Isabel Flores, and she's voiced by Elizabeth Daly, and yeah, really good in this too. Again, given a real chance to shine in this, and I think you know, really comes up quite well. You got John Razek, or Ratchek, we would call it in this version, voiced by Jamie Haynes, and he's the leader, and he's a seasoned veteran and basically decorated. You know, he's the mentor, if you like, and he does really well in this. I think does a fantastic job at, you know, giving, I guess, you know, the right advice at the right times and pushing people as well. We also have Sergeant Francis Brutto, played by David DeLuise. That's one of the DeLuises, folks. There you go. And he's basically, he's outspoken and aggressive and basically an antagonist for the rest of the squad. We've got Richard Doc LaCroix, Corporal, played by James Horan. Yes, James Horan. Now, that's a name I've not heard for a long, long time, if it was Obi-Wan Kenobi. But, of course, he's an actor, which, you know, has been in quite a bit of stuff. And, of course, he was in Highlander, the series. It's the last time, sorry, he, of course, took the role of an immortal and one of the better sword fights, too, against Adrian Paul's Duncan MacLeod of the Glen MacLeod. So else we got in there? We've got Bill Fagabaki playing Corporal Jeff Gossard. There's a name, Gossard, from Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam, folks, which is great. We've also got Lieutenant Carmen Ibanez, played by Tish Hicks. You know, similar to the movie, folks, pretty much. We've got Nicholas Guest voicing the character of Major Xander Barklow, of course, Nicholas Guest. Now, if you don't know who that is, you might want to give him a little bit of a highlight, a bit of a check out. Of course, Nicholas Guest is a fantastic actor and somebody you might know from some amazing works. That's right. All the way back to working in not only animation, but many others. In animation, he's known for Justice League, Godzilla, Batman, The Brave and the Bold. Live-action roles, Power Rangers, Sons of Anarchy, and Sleepy Hollow, played General William Howe. Now, movie-wise, I'm a huge fan of this guy. He's worked in The Long Riders, was his first, playing Robert Ford. And, of course, that's a great film. Also, you can see him in The Crew at the start, of course, of Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. He plays one of the cadets, and, of course, the Kobayashi Maru. He's in Cloak and Dagger, Trading Places, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Brain Smasher, A Love Story, that's right, Kickboxer 4, Cowboy Bebop, the movie he was in as well, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, he did voices of as well, along with, of course, working in Paranorman, Tangled, and of course, Astro Boy, where he played the Walter Robot as well. Great actor, and pretty funny guy, gotta say. But I think in this one in particular, he's one of the more interesting characters. He's definitely, to voice anyone like this is just got a beautiful voice for it. Ryder Strong plays Carl Jenkins in this, who's a special operations tactician. Again, just like the film, folks. We've got, of course, Steve Staley playing Colonel Tvai. We've got Robert Paperboy Higgins, voiced by Alexander Polinski as well. Now on Psycon or Psycho, the command there, we've got Thomas Wagner playing Commander Marlowe. We've got Irene Bedard playing General Redwing. We've also got Ali Ermey playing Sky Marshal Sanchez. Now the late great Ali Ermey was, of course, a real gunny, a gunnery sergeant. So it's great to see that voice that we know so well from, of course, all the great stuff he did on YouTube in the last few years. But, of course, his work on the one, the only, of course, Full Metal Jacket. And, of course, those times he went up against Steven Seagal and should have kicked his ass, to be perfectly honest with you. Drill instructor and, of course, Sergeant Charlie Zim, voiced by Clancy Brown. Yes, Clancy Brown comes back and, of course, plays the role again. His beloved, he is the hero of Starship Troopers. So, let's have a look at it. So, what are some of the things that we get to see in the series? So, in the Pluto campaign, we get to see a number of the different arachnid warriors and stuff like that. And this way, we've got warrior bugs, sentry bugs, tanker bugs, plasma bugs, hoppers, and, of course, transport bugs, which is great. In the Hydora campaign, we get to see kamikaze ripplers, mama ripplers, water tigers, brain bugs, and, of course, chariot bugs, also known as minion bugs. In the Toffa campaign, which I've watched, we get blister bugs, blaster bugs, and control bugs. That's right. Yeah, get yourself a control bug, folks. In the Tesca campaign, we get jungle spiders, nursa bugs, and tanker worms. In the Zephyr campaign, we get fire fries and, of course, ice bugs. In the Clendesu campaign, we get Xander bugs. We get nursa, spider, imposter bugs, queen bugs, royal guard bugs, and, of course, super transport bugs. That's right. Now, not only to know that, we actually get other alien creatures in this series. We get the Skinnies, roughly humanoid-like, but very, very thin, and of course, they're native to Tophet. We get the Sparkies, the Seal Sharks, Razorback Croc, Raptor Bird, and the Space Leech. Yes. So, what about the human forces? What do we get? Do we have weaponry, technology? Yes, we do, folks. We have a lot. Here's just a bit of a rundown on what you can use in the mobile infantry. We've got starships, dropships, marauders, which is basically a mecha-like skeleton, if you like. We've also got Merida Smart Rifle. This is, of course, the rifle used by, of course, the crews in this. And yes, you'll remember from the movie, yes, based around the Ruger Mini 14 Bullpup. We've also got the Schlockstick Fighter, which is a small short-range craft. Bomber, another one like that too. Troop Transport Flatbed Drop Suit. A heavily armored suit that's capable of opening the occupant with, of course, huge amount of firepower. Skimmer, we've got the jet ski raft. We've also got power suit, standard issue for all soldiers. We've also got a grappling gun, and we've also got a rocket launcher. That's right. They're ready to rock and roll, aren't they, folks? But how is this different? Okay, how is this really different from not only the novel, but the movies as well? So, Johnny Rico is an Asian Filipino in Heinlein's original novel. Rico is played by a Caucasian Argentinian in Buenos Aires in Roughnecks. In the first film and the Japanese series, Rico is an Argentinian of Spanish descent. Private Jenkins in this one too, which is Carl Rico's friend, are two different people in the novel. So basically it's Carl and the other, Private Jenkins. But they were sort of brought together. And of course, they've got the dazzling ability that they have. Dizzy Flores in the novel is a man, not a woman. In the film, the animated series, the character is changed to a woman. In the series, the Marauder is a large humanoid mech type.
vehicle manned by one trooper. In the novel, the Marauder is the name of the standard armor worn by the majority of troopers. Mobile infantry in the novel did not accept women, whereas in the film, they do. In the series, in the film, Raychek or Ratchek taught Dizzy and Rico. In the novel, their instructor in history and moral philosophy is Lieutenant Colonel Jean V. Dubois, whose letters to Rico encourage him through the training. The novel begins with a raid on Skinny's home. Well, the Skinnies aren't introduced in the series until the third campaign, and in the novel, Ratchek has already been killed, and his roughnecks honor his memory by being exceptional. So yeah, folks, that's awesome. But let's just talk about it. The series itself, definitely worth checking out. Like I said, I think you're only going to be able to find maybe three or four of the DVDs that are out there. Very hard to find a lot of the others. This series gets a 5 out of 5 on Hallenbach scale, folks. Well, we come to the end of the show, folks. I want to thank you all for, of course, checking out the show. And be sure to check out, like, and subscribe, of course, all content on at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And anywhere else you can catch us. We're pretty much everywhere. Check us out, and of course, fmnet.popping.com. Until then, mate, this is your place for, of course, action, movie, cinema, retro, and of course, sci-fi. The Lethal Mullet.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.